I love songs about heaven. I think as I get older, maybe more so, God has placed eternity into our souls by the gift of the Spirit. And there is a longing that rises up as Spirit groaning for that place where we will gather. I'd love to preach a different kind of message tonight. Turn with me to 1 Samuel chapter 20. 1 Samuel chapter 20. Being raised in Africa, my upbringing was very different. We didn't know a lot about what it meant to have friends or to be friends. I largely played with my brother. I didn't speak the language of the natives around us. It was difficult. And then we came back to the States. I hate to say it, but I was decidedly a strange kid. Maybe some of you would say, and you haven't changed a lot. But sad to say, my freshman year in high school, I came to have my first real, true friend. Went to a public school. I was out of a Christian home, very strict, very rigid, and man, oh man, was I out of water. And this senior took care of me. Just God's grace. He became a friend. He watched over me. He kept me from making really idiotic mistakes. He occasionally intervened. And when things were going south, and I'll never forget him. I've often wondered what happened to him. True friendships are, unfortunately, really rare. And we come to this text tonight, and here is a friendship so close, a friendship that you rarely see today. We see many deep friendships in the Scriptures. One of them is Paul and Barnabas. Barnabas advocates for Paul in the church at Jerusalem, brings him to the church at Antioch, travels with him in mission work, and then has a breach of fellowship that is later restored. And here in this text is another of those deep and loving and sacrificial friendships. And it's more amazing when you consider, when you remember that Jonathan is the prince regent, the lineal heir to the throne of Israel. David has already been anointed the true and future king. David had served the Lord, the kingdom, and the soul well. He has married one of Saul's daughters. And his best friend is Saul's son. He's received the adoration and adulation of the people of the kingdom, and particularly the ladies. He has soothed Saul during his afflictions. And David has become the object of King Saul's jealousy and his hatred and murderous plots. Saul has attempted to kill him in the palace. He's broken a covenant before God with Jonathan and has now attempted to kill him publicly. Yet, the Lord has protected the future king. He has escaped the spear. He has been shielded and protected by Saul's children, Jonathan and Michael. And finally, the Spirit of God protected David when he humiliated Saul before the prophet of God, the prophetic band, and Saul's assassins. But David is still on the run. And this, what we will see in 1 Samuel 20, will begin the long, hard years of being a fugitive on the run. He seems to be truly baffled by Saul's hatred. So he leaves Samuel and the house in Ramah. He meets up with Jonathan. And so the camera focuses in on this meeting. Family conflict often can and does destroy friendships, but not so here. Jonathan declares, "I began with you, And this friendship is unshakable. In verses 1 to 4, there's a surprising protest, and these words will be repeated several times in several ways in the chapters that follow. What has David done? Reading in 1 Samuel chapter 20 and picking up in verse 1. Then David fled from Naoth and Ramah and came and said before Jonathan, "What have I done? What is my guilt? What is my sin before your father that he seeks my life?" And Jonathan, he said to him, "Far from it. You shall not die. Behold, my father does nothing, either great or small, without disclosing it to me. And why should my father hide this from me? It's not so." David vowed again, saying, "Your father knows well that I have found favor in your eyes, and he thinks, 'Don't let Jonathan know this, lest he be grieved.' But truly, as the Lord lives and as your soul lives, there is but a step between me and death." Then Jonathan said to David, "Whatever you say, I will do for you." David does not understand why Saul is seeking to kill him. He's done nothing to deserve this. In some sense, his innocence and naivety is charming. He does not know how popularity and his growing power is a threat to Saul and a threat to Jonathan. He has no mind to overthrow Saul, so he cannot see why Saul would be jealous. But all this is about to change. God is going to take him through a number of years of maturing and developing and nativity stripping hardship. Jonathan is apparently unaware of what has taken place in chapter 19. The last thing Jonathan has is his father swearing not to kill him before the Lord, no less. Besides, Saul tells Jonathan everything. He doesn't hide anything, but David has an explanation. Saul does not want to grieve Jonathan. But be assured, David is so close, one step away from being executed by the king. So, Jonathan says, "Whatever you want, I will try to do for you." Verses 5 to 11, we have an earnest plea. Here, David says, "Well, let's have a test. Let's have a test to see what Saul's intentions truly are." Listen to what the text says. "And David said to Jonathan, 'Behold, tomorrow is the new moon, and I should not fail to sit at table with the king.'" Parentheses for those of you, this is a festival time, a new moon festival. And so there was a lot of festivities and feasting, and so it would have been expected. "Behold, tomorrow is the new moon, and I should not fail to sit at table with the king. But let me go, that I may hide myself in the field till the third day at evening. And if your father misses me at all, then say, 'David earnestly asked leave of me to run to Bethlehem, to city, for there is a yearly sacrifice there for all the clan.' And if he says, 'Oh, good, it will be well with your servant.' But if he is angry, then know that harm is determined by him. Therefore, deal kindly with your servant, for you have brought your servant into a covenant of the Lord with you. There is guilt in me, Jonathan. Kill me yourself. Why should you bring me to your father?" And Jonathan said, "Far be it from you. If I knew that it was determined by my father that harm should come to you, would I not tell you?" Then David said to Jonathan, "Who will tell me if your father answers you roughly?" And Jonathan said to David, "Come, let us go into the field." And so they went out into the field. So it's the time of the month when normally Saul's family gathers for a meal, a feast. It's a festival time, and normally David would be there. However, he's going to hide in the field and not attend. And Jonathan will say that David has gone to his family home for the holiday. And Saul's reaction to David's absence will show his intention. If Saul is angry that David is not there, then he has evil intention. And David pleads with Jonathan not to hand him over to his father. Jonathan is horrified. He not only will not hand David over, but will warn him of how Saul responded and what Saul intends. Jonathan knows David is innocent. There is any intent by David to take the throne by force, then David says, Jonathan, just kill me now. David is saying, we have begun together. We will finish together. And so verses 12 through 17, there is a shared promise. They go out into the field where David will hide during the holiday. And there, verse 12, Jonathan said to David, the Lord, the God of Israel, be witness. When I have sounded out my father about this time tomorrow or the third day, behold, if he is well disposed toward David, shall I not then send and disclose it to you? But should it please my father to do you harm, the Lord do so to Jonathan and more also. If I do not disclose it to you and send you away, that you may go in safety. May the Lord be with you as he has been with my father. There's a certain irony there that you just got to kind of chuckle at. If I am still alive, show me the steadfast love of the Lord that I may not die. And do not cut off your steadfast love from my house forever when the Lord cuts off every one of the enemies of David from the face of the earth. He is saying, you are going to be king. And so, guard me and my little ones. And Jonathan made a covenant with the house of David, saying, may the Lord take vengeance on David's enemies. And Jonathan made David swear again by his love for him, for he loved him as he loved his own soul. And so Jonathan and David share a covenant. Jonathan promises to tell David what he finds out about Saul's intention and his plans. And he invokes God's blessing on David and God's vengeance on David's enemies. And he obtains from David a promise to protect and to provide for Jonathan's descendants. Oh, what a story that is. When Mephibosheth, lame in his feet, David does good for because of his love for Jonathan. And I love verse 17. And Jonathan made David swear again by his love for him, for he loved him as he loved his own soul. What is there to say? They loved each other even as they loved their own families. So they swore to each other. Theirs is a covenant of love to protect and to provide that will extend over the generations to sons and daughters. I have begun with you. Verses 18 through 42. True covenant love will never quit. Will be determined to stay faithful to the end. Jonathan is saying, I will finish with you. Verses 18 through 23. They devise a clever plan. Jonathan said to him, tomorrow is the new moon. You will be missed because your seat will be empty. On the third day, go down quickly to the place where you hide yourself when the matter was in hand and remain beside the stone heap. I'll shoot three arrows to the side of it as though I'd shot at a mark. Behold, I will send the boy saying, go find the arrows. I say to the boy, and he's shouting, look, the arrows are on this side of you. Take them. Then you are to come for the Lord as the Lord lives. It is safe for you and there's no danger. But if I say to the youth, look, the arrows are beyond you, then go. The Lord has sent you away. And as for the matter of which you and I have spoken, behold, the Lord is between you and me forever. Yes, he is. They need a way for Jonathan to tell David the result of their scheme. They don't want to possibly expose Jonathan to his father's anger. And Jonathan wants to continue to be David's friend in the palace. So they devised this scheme to let David know how the king reacted. And it's simple. Shoot arrows from one end of the field to the other where David is hiding. What he says to guide the lad who is retrieving the arrows will tell David whether to come out of hiding or to flee. for his life. Verses 24 through 34, the plan is executed. Verse 24, so David hid himself in the field. And when the new moon came, the king sat down to eat food. The king sat on his seat, as at other times, and on the seat by the wall. Jonathan sat opposite, and Abner sat by Saul's side. Oh, stop. Abner? Where did he come from? But David's place was empty. Saul did not say anything that day, for he thought, oh, something has happened to him that he's not clean. Surely, he's not here because he's not clean. But on the second day, the day after the new moon, David's place was empty. And Saul said to Jonathan, his son, now why has not the son of Jesse come to the meal either yesterday or today? Jonathan answered Saul, David earnestly asked leave of me to go to Bethlehem. And he said, let me go, for our clan holds a sacrifice in the city, and my brother has commanded me to be there. So now if I have found favor in your eyes, let me get away. Oops, slip of the tongue, that word there is escape. And see my brothers. For this reason, he has not come to the king's table. Well, Saul's anger was kindled against Jonathan, and he said to him, you son of a perverse, rebellious woman, do I not know that you have chosen the son of Jesse to your own shame and to the shame of your mother's nakedness? For as long as the son of Jesse lives on the earth, neither you nor your kingdom shall be established. Therefore, send and bring him to me, for he shall surely die. Jonathan answered Saul, his father, why should he be put to death? What has he done? But Saul hurled his spear at him to strike him. So, in a wonderful piece of understatement, Jonathan knew that his father had determined to put David to death. And Jonathan rose from the table in fierce anger and ate no food the second day of the month, for he was grieved for his David because his father had disgraced him. Now, the scene is the room where so much of our story has happened. Saul is in his corner by the wall, and Saul's right-hand man, Abner, is near. Jonathan at his place, David's place is empty. And of course, there's no comment from Saul on the first day of the festival. He thinks, well, possibly he's ceremonially unclean. He can't be with us, so it's okay. The second day, Saul asks, and Jonathan answers as planned. Well, almost. And you think, well, why in the world would this answer be so provoking, right? And at the sort of human common level, as you read the story, that's one of the big questions, like, what? How is this even going to make Saul angry? I mean, after all, what's so wrong about David going to be with his family? Here it is. David asked Jonathan's permission, not the king's. This would feel to Saul like David was ignoring Saul's authority and going around him and asking Jonathan instead. And Jonathan embellished what they had agreed to say. The little phrase, so that I may escape, is added and gives a clue as to what was actually going on, so that I can get away to my family. Yes, he has often gotten away before. And Saul may have had a little surprise for David. There by Saul's side is the next best warrior in Saul's army. Wonder how close his spear is, as we've already heard. Pretty close. And once again, Saul's plot is thwarted. Is Saul ever ticked off? And like much jealous anger, it gets focused on the wrong person. Saul's anger against David pours over Jonathan. This is strong language. It is profane in a cutting, horrible, hurtful way. You are just like your mother, perverted and rebellious. You make shameful, lewd choices just like she did. You have chosen him, David, over me, your father. You have jeopardized your future throne, and none of us is going to be safe as long as he lives. Sadly, Jonathan is actually the son of a shameful, perverse, degraded man, his father. But Saul, of course, would never admit that. These words cut deep, but not as much as what follows. Saul, in an authoritative command, you bring that son of Jesse here so he can be killed. Jonathan, rising righteous anger. Why? What has he done to deserve the death penalty? His thud. The spear at Saul's right hand flies to strike through Jonathan's heart. Jonathan dodges and rises to flee. John Woodhouse writes, the significant thing for us to see is that Saul now identified Jonathan with David. Three times that same spear had been hurled by that same hand at David. Now Jonathan, by his allegiance to David, has become the target of that spear. And Jonathan is grieved. He's grieved for David. He knows their lives are in danger. He now joins David in absenting himself from the festival. Jonathan publicly identifies himself with David in the full knowledge of Saul. And with delicious irony and understatement, the author says, now Jonathan gets it. Saul means to kill David, no matter what. And in verses 35 through 42, there is a loving promise, and Jonathan keeps his word. Verse 35, in the morning, Jonathan went out into the field to the appointment with David. We're on the third day of the festival. And with him a little boy, and he said to the boy, run and find the arrows that I shoot. And as the boy ran, he shot an arrow beyond him. And when the boy came to the place of the arrow that Jonathan had shot, Jonathan called after the boy and said, is not the arrow beyond you? And Jonathan called after the boy, hurry, be quick, do not stay. So Jonathan's boy gathered up the arrows and came to his master. But the boy knew nothing. Only Jonathan and David knew the matter. And Jonathan gave his weapons to his boy and said to him, go and carry them to the city. And as soon as the boy had gone, David rose from beside the stone heap and fell on his face to the ground and bowed three times. And they kissed one another and wept with one another, David weeping the most. And Jonathan said to David, go in peace, because we have sworn both of us in the name of the Lord, saying, the Lord shall be between me and you, and between my offspring and your offspring forever. He rose and departed, and Jonathan went into the city. And Jonathan executes the plan they had agreed on. Arrows are fired. His boy is sent. And a guiding shout that tells of imminent danger. And when the lad returns with the arrows, he is sent into the city with them. Ah, what a poignant farewell. David on his face before Jonathan. Jonathan pulling him up as tears run down their faces. The custom of their culture, they kissed on the cheek. They wept. Here is friendship true. There is the benediction of peace, an affirmation of promise, and a departure. Not united again in this life. And the Lord, the Lord, is between them. How does the Spirit want us to hear and see this story? I think three things. First, there's a connection. Jonathan stands between two kings. He stands between Saul and David. And there is a covenant. Jonathan is loyal to the true king. I have begun with you. And I will end with you. I will finish with you. And the cost. Jonathan gives up the kingship to follow the future king. So here is the story in other words. I love you, my friend, with all my heart. I made a covenant with you forever. I knew the danger, and I went anyway. I paid the cost, and I made the sacrifice. Familiar story, that. Of a great relationship, of an enduring covenant, and a deep sacrifice, all for provision and protection of a people much loved. So, is this about true friendship? Do we draw from this that we must have true friends? That we must be prepared to sacrifice for them? Yes. Yes, it is. But this story says that to us because of Jesus Christ. He is the faithful friend, the true king, the costly sacrifice, and the loving promise. He is the Lord between Jonathan and David forever. He is the friend of sinners. And because of Him, our love for one another can say, I have begun with you, and I will finish with you, because I know what the cost is, and because of Jesus forever. Let's pray. Our Father, greater love hath no man than this, that a man give his life for his friends. And so you sent your Son to give His life for us. And in that is love. Love eternal. A heavenly friendship forever. Thank you. In Jesus' name.